From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Trump's four-day visit to the UK went about as badly as Trump had feared it would. After a year of avoiding an official visit given the planned mass protests, Trump visited the UK for the first time as president last week and stayed at his golf course in Glasgow through the weekend. Everywhere he went, protesters attempted to get into his field of view. And in an interview with the British tabloid The Sun, Trump shockingly criticized UK Prime Minister Theresa May right before his meeting with her. He claimed he had given her advice on how to negotiate a Brexit deal, but that she didn't listen to him. Then in a CBS interview a few days later, he admitted that the Brexit issue was quite a bit more complicated than he thought. Linked to Brexit is a possible US-UK trade deal that Trump initially claimed was off, before he predictably changed his mind and said in another interview, "I think we're going to have a great trade deal." But groups like Global Justice Now, based in the UK, are urging Prime Minister May to reject any trade deal. We go now to the UK to speak with Dorothy Guerrero. She is the head of policy and advocacy at Global Justice Now. Welcome to the program, Dorothy.
Yeah, hello.
Now, we haven't heard very much about a US-UK trade deal. What is so far in the works, as far as you know, of this potential bilateral trade deal, and why is it linked to Brexit?
Well, it is not much in the news yet, because first and foremost, any trade deal is secretive. But then at the same time, because technically, while the UK is still negotiating, doing the Brexit negotiation, it is not supposed to enter into any trade agreements with other countries. But nonetheless, that doesn't stop the US and the UK trade representatives to start discussions. So there are talks going on already. But what they were talking about, what they were negotiating about, is not really known to the public. It's not also open to scrutiny. Even the parliament is not aware of what being negotiated or what being discussed. So, which is actually the nature of trade agreements.
Right. Now, ahead of Trump's visit, literally days before he visited, Theresa May was facing a major political crisis over Brexit and over how she negotiated that deal. There is a lot of disagreement on how the UK is going to extricate itself from the European Union following a contentious public referendum in 2016. So there are people who are on the side of the so-called soft Brexit and a hard Brexit. And over that, two ministers actually resigned from May's government, leaving her quite politically vulnerable. Can you explain for our American audiences what the fight is between the two sides and where your organization, Global Justice Now, and other social justice activists stand on how Brexit should happen, or if it should happen?
Well, when we talk about the biggest issue that is dividing the country, there truly is a divide between those who are favoring soft Brexit or a hard Brexit. After the referendum, there's a lot of misinformation during the campaign, and this resulted to a lot of expectations. And after a year, people are discovering that it will actually be very, very difficult to deliver those promises. For example, those Brexiteers promised that, you know, instead of money going to the EU as contributions, they will be diverted instead to the National Health Services. That instead of following and kowtowing to the European Union, we will take back control and we will have our own say on matters that is important to us. Now people are seeing that there's actually very, very little foundation to most of these claims, and that at the same time, the fact that inside the ruling party, there are also a lot of those debates, a lot of disagreements, and major politicians, major key players in this instance have resigned within 24 hours shows how unity is very, very fragile inside the Conservative Party. And the problem is for many people, those that have voted for Brexit, if there will be an election now, and there are polls that are stating that, if there will be an election now, they may not vote for Leave. They might vote for Remain. So the question is, can it be rolled back? So that's a big dilemma. And about the fragility of Theresa May's government, there is a motion that will be passed, or there will be questions where will there be a vote of no confidence. And the latest figure we've got is that there's already 40. Mm-hmm. And in practice, you needed around 48 votes to unseat the prime minister. So there will be 8 votes needed. So it's very uncertain at the moment whether she will be able to continue ruling. But at the same time, the question of even if she managed to succeed and continue governing, what is in stake for all of us? With what you mentioned before, the UK-US trade agreements, the reason why we are very much against it is that it will be like a TTIP for two, that most of the provisions that the British public have rejected with the Trans-Pacific Investment Partnership Agreement is that it will be pulled back again in the UK-US trade agreement.
Right, the TTIP was a very contentious trade deal that a lot of activists and progressive-minded people opposed. Yeah.
Yeah, and we campaigned against that heavily. We have done local meetings. We have explained to the public why it is so dangerous. And the reason why it is so dangerous is because it has that provision of the industry state dispute settlement, wherein corporations will have the power to sue any government when they see that their profit will be at stake or there will be a threat to their profit. And right. Then there are already a lot of corporations that are suing governments. I think the most well-known is the Philip Morris suing the Australian government. And the impact of that is not just the fact that whether they will win or lose in the... Of course, whether a country win or lose in such cases, the country will have to pay for litigation. And in for many developing countries, that would mean paying millions of dollars that they could use for basic services, to prop up their health services, to build schools for kids.
And of course, Dorothy, it's a lot of the liberal high-level representatives that are promoting such trade deals that have such things embedded into them, you know, that give lip service to workers' rights and labor and organized labor and unions, but then essentially work to promote corporate power. I want to ask you, though, how did Trump's visit to the UK impact Theresa May's position politically, if at all? Most Americans, I think, were really aghast, shocked, embarrassed, disgusted with just the sort of bare, just basic lack of diplomatic skills by our president in lobbing his criticisms against Theresa May, and Theresa May having to sort of pretend as though he didn't say any of the things he said. All of this within the context that, of course, your organization and many of us here in the US have long criticized the so-called special relationship between the US and UK because it's more about corporate power. But still, what did you make of Trump's just insults against May?
Well, he raised it to this highest level of special. Of course, we don't know what that means, especially if you're insulting the prime minister right in front of the media. Because after saying that on that interview with The Sun, it's also interesting that he did that interview with a publication that many of the conservatives and the new right are actually subscribed to. So that means, one, he doesn't care about the media at all, and two, he just wanted to address people that he knows will support him, because those are the people that read Sun. Secondly, what he actually shows the public as well is that his ability to lie without batting an eyelash, that he could lie in face of everyone and say that, oh, I did not really say that, that's fake news.
And of course, the Sun had taped the interview and put the audio up on their website.
So how can you deny something that is recorded and can be reviewed?
I feel like we here in the US have just gotten so, we've just become numb to all the lying now.
Yeah, I think that's the first danger of Trump, his capacity to lie, and the fact that he doesn't feel ashamed about his lies, that he actually prosper in the post-truth situation and reality that we are in now. And that is very dangerous for democracy, because if you have the leader of the most powerful country on earth that will stop at nothing and tell lies just to advance his interests, so that's really problematic. As you could see as well in the visit, I think the big protest that showed him how much the UK people like him. So there were 250,000 people that protested that day, and there are also protests in other cities. It's not just in London. There were also 60,000 people that protested in Edinburgh the next day. So that shows as well, for us, that's a record, because that's the biggest mobilization in the UK in the last 10 years. And that protest also galvanized unity, because it was able to unite people from different walks of life. I know a number of people who have never go to protest but joined the protest. So that shows a lot. The fact that we were able to do that, it is the biggest protest outside the U.S. I'm really happy that the people have found a base of unity. But at the same time, it's not just about Trump. It's not just about telling him that we don't like him. It's also address to the UK government. We wanted to say as well that we know what Trump stands for. We don't like his politics of hate. We don't like his politics of racism and xenophobia and anti and homophobia as well, misogyny and all that. We also wanted to tell our government here, the UK government, that we don't want the UK government to normalize that kind of politics. That it is beyond one person. It is about rejecting that politics and the fact that we will not allow the UK government to enable such kind of politics. Because it is, we are very fearful already. We are very worried that there's a reemergence of far-right authoritarianism in Europe. Mm-hmm. And the election of Trump actually emboldened a lot of these far-right people. That they feel it's okay again to be racist, that it is okay again to propagate the politics of hate. So that protest is a statement to tell the world that we will not normalize Trumpism. We will not normalize such kind of politics, and we will fight and we will struggle against it.
I want to play an excerpt of an interview that Trump gave to CBS, where he sort of continued the back and forth self-contradictions that he began during his trip with the Sun interview. He decided that the European Union was a foe when he was asked a question by the interviewer.
What's your biggest competitor, your biggest foe globally right now?
Well, I think we have a lot of foes. I think the European Union is a foe, what they do to us in trade. Now, you wouldn't think of the European Union, but they're a foe. Russia's a foe in certain respects. China's a foe economically, certainly. They're a foe. But that doesn't mean they're bad. It doesn't mean anything. It means that they're competitors. They want to do well, and we want to do well. And we're starting to do well. You see what's going on. We have the best employment numbers probably that we've ever had. Black unemployment is the lowest level in history. Hispanic unemployment, the lowest level in history, Jeff. Women unemployment, lowest in 66 years. Our numbers are great. Our GDP numbers are far greater than what they thought.
A lot of people might be surprised to hear you list the EU as a foe before China and Russia.
No, I look at them all. Look, EU is very difficult. I want to tell you, maybe the thing that's most difficult, don't forget, both my parents were born in EU sectors, okay? I mean, my mother was Scotland, my father was Germany, and, you know, I love those countries. I respect the leaders of those countries, but in a trade sense, they've really taken advantage of us, and many of those countries are in NATO, and they weren't paying their bills.
And that is Donald Trump speaking to CBS during an interview recorded over the weekend at his golf course in Scotland. My guest is Dorothy Guerrero, head of policy and advocacy at the UK-based organization Global Justice Now. Dorothy, when Trump talks about the EU giving the United States an unfair trade situation and that trade between the US and EU is very unfair to the US, and then when he launches these very significant trade wars, attaching very high tariffs against EU products, is he echoing some of the same arguments that you saw in the pro-Brexit crowd?
Uh-huh. Well, I think we have to clarify first, where is he coming from? When he say that all this trade is hurting his country and that the other trade powers are being unfair to the U.S., first and foremost, the U.S. is actually the linchpin of globalization. All the global political or the trade and investment regime was actually designed with the interest of the U.S. and the other big economic powers to eat the cake, you know, and trade and expand unfair trade to other countries. So it is laughable that he's saying now that the other countries have benefited from those trade, when in fact, when all those trade negotiations were negotiated, there is always a loser and winners in trade negotiations. And most normally, it is the big power that wins, and it is a smaller power that loses. And the UK had been, the US had been a very developed expertise in trade negotiations. It has negotiated two big multilateral treaties and 12 bilateral treaties with other countries. So it is impossible to believe that with such expertise, the other countries can get away cheating the US. At the same time, I also believe that when Trump say that this time it's America first, many analysts, many observers think that it is the U.S. withdrawing from its role as a leader of globalization, that it is like being isolationist, when in fact it's not isolationism, because isolationism means you're giving up that control. What Trump is doing and telling the other big powers is that, hey, it is my way or no way at all. So he's trying to put a gun on the head of the other powers, of the other great leaders, because he wanted of the other powers and the other leaders of the EU and the developed countries. And in that aspect, the trade war will not benefit anybody. That is one reason why multilateralism is promoted, so as not to give space for such trade wars again. I think lastly, with his positions about promoting or protecting industries, especially American business, it is too early to say now, but there are signals that are saying or telling us, showing us that it's also not a way to go, because in the first place, it's not the kind of protectionism that countries, the U.S. or even developing countries would need, because it's more about giving more power to corporations. Transnational corporations, big corporations, are already very powerful. If you would look at the pharmaceutical corporations, they have a say on the price of our life-saving medicines, right, and medicines we all need. So they already have a lot of power.
So, Dorothy, so if trade deals tend to leave, you know, tend to undermine democracy, and yet cutting off all trade deals isn't good for people either, what does Global Justice Now want to see? What's the kind of fair trade that you would like to see between countries, either on a multilateral level or a bilateral travel? Because, of course, the world cannot function without trade. We do need trade.
It doesn't mean we cut all trade, because trade is important.
Yeah.
The problem is trade agreements nowadays is not just about trade. It is actually more about enabling and facilitating privatization. It is actually the government being used or facilitating corporations to have more control and more power even on policies. When I mentioned earlier the industry-state dispute settlement, it's not just about corporations having the power to sue governments, but the fact that it could also affect policy chill. That when Philip Morris, I will use the example again, when Philip Morris sued the Australian government, it sent policy chills to Malaysia, to the Philippines, to Thailand, because they're saying, look, if a far richer country can be sued by a corporation, what will happen to us? I'm from the Philippines originally, and in my country, we have an experience as well of winning some of those cases. But despite the fact that we won some of those ISDS cases, we still ended up paying $52 million of the cost for litigation. So many developing countries will not afford that. In terms of what kind of trade do we need, how can we make, we have been, Global Justice Now have been campaigning to make trade fair, and at the same time to design a kind of trade that will actually benefit people. What does the country needs? Most of the FTAs that has swirled around or have been negotiated in the last 10, 15, or even 20 years are all a kind of one model wherein it will be more aggressive, more comprehensive, and far more ambitious than the last one. And this ambition, this comprehensiveness, this aggressiveness, the end scenario is to reduce the power of government to govern, to set up industrial policies. And that's why we ended up with transnational corporations not paying the appropriate taxes that they should be paying. They could enter an economy without even really investing, and at the same time not paying what is due. And that makes governments have less income and at the same time a lot less finance to build services.
Right.
With the UK-US trade agreement, what we are very fearful about is the fact that the US is targeting the National Health Services. There is nothing more British than the NHS.
Right.
It's a product of years that people would feel, we pay our taxes, but we get health services. And the US-UK trade agreement, what it would mean is a lot of services, and it will open the NHS to corporations. It will privatize health services.
Right.
Sorry to be blunt as well. We have seen how it is in the US, that if you don't have money, you won't be able to avail of health services.
Yep.
In the UK, at least with the NHS, people, hardworking people can still sleep at night that if something goes wrong or and they get ill, they can rely on the National Health Service.
Certainly the NHS is the envy of us here in the United States. Dorothy, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and helping put these issues into context.
Thank you very much for having me again.
My guest has been Dorothy Guerrero, Head of Policy and Advocacy at the UK-based organization Global Justice Now. We've been discussing a US-UK trade deal in the wake of Trump's controversial visit to the UK. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo. Thank you so much.